In this hour, we'll be talking with Dr. John Brandenburg back on Coast to Coast. One of his books, Life and Death on Mars. He is a plasma physicist. Fascinating discussion just ahead on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. John Brandenburg, of course, plasma physicist. He did his graduate work at California at Lawrence Livermore National Lab in controlled plasmas for fusion power. He's worked in defense, energy, space research. He's also part of the Clementine mission of the moon, which discovered water at the moon's poles. And however, the focus of his scientific career has been to complete the great effort of Einstein to unify the two long-range forces of nature, gravity, electromagnetism. Lots to talk with him about Mars, and here he is back on Coast to Coast. Hey, John, welcome back.
Hey, George, it's great to be back on the Coast to Coast.
Now, are you in Hawaii right now?
Oh, no, I wish. Okay, I'm in Wisconsin.
Because you're going to be in Albuquerque pretty soon, aren't you?
That's right. It'll be warmer in Albuquerque.
For sure. What are you going to be doing there?
We're going to be holding the STAFE 2 conference, and I've been honored by being asked to be chair of that conference. We'll be talking about Cydonia, Mars, life in general, fusion power, controlled gravity, cold fusion, and evidence for large nuclear explosions on Mars in the past.
What do you think happened to that planet, John? Something big happened.
Well, I've been working on this with a lot of other people for a long time. It's actually, we're reaching kind of a critical mass. We've gotten so much data, both on Mars' past life conditions, the ocean, Mars ocean, but also the imaging data we're getting, both from Cydonia Mensa and another place called Galaxias Chaos. It used to be called Utopia, but they renamed it recently Galaxias Chaos. It, very interesting, but we found two more faces there with the same markings
Wow.
as the original face. So this is starting to look like a no-brainer. And so we're going to be discussing all that data, that new data. And the other problem is that what used to look like perhaps the result of a freak nature, natural nuclear reactor on Mars, the apparent nuclear explosion. This is evidenced by nuclear isotopes and a pattern of radiation, gamma radiation from the surface of Mars that has two okay. hot spots. It's starting to look like this may not have been natural.
Oh, really?
Very sad, yes.
So would this have been warfare or some calamity, some mishap?
We're not sure. We're trying to sift through all of the data that we have. One possibility is someone else came along and dropped a hydrogen bomb as big as the Dubai Tower on planet Mars.
Holy Toledo!
I know it is a stupefying thing to contemplate. This goes back, unfortunately, to way back when I began these investigations. I was working at Sandia National Labs. And I went to Lawrence Livermore National Lab, where I worked on controlled fusion. But most of the activity at Livermore Lab was building hydrogen bombs. So sort of all of us grad students there got an informal working knowledge of nuclear weapons and how they work and everything. So I'm kind of familiar with that, but there was a comment made by a nuclear physicist at Sandia when I showed him the Mars isotopes in the atmosphere, and he looked aghast at me and said, "Someone nuked them." And I did not understand what he meant then, why he had drawn that conclusion. But now, 30 years later, after studying all the data, I now understand why he said that. The pattern of nuclear isotopes, particularly of xenon, matches the pattern of nuclear isotopes created by nuclear testing on Earth.
And what on Earth, John, would have possessed an outside force, let's say another civilization from some other planetary civilization?
Yes.
What would possess them to take out an entire planet?
It is incomprehensible, but unfortunately we have precedent on Earth for things like this happening on a smaller scale. There is a paradox called Fermi's paradox. Here is Enrico Fermi, the physicist who made the first nuclear chain reaction. He went through, all through World War II. They built the atomic bomb and then, of course, dropped it on Hiroshima. He's sitting down to lunch with Edward Teller, the father of the hydrogen bomb. They're working to build the hydrogen bomb in Los Alamos to beat Joe Stalin to having a hydrogen bomb. They did that barely, by the way.
Yeah.
And so these are men who do not think in the box. There is no box for these people. And they are discussing extraterrestrial life. And Enrico Fermi says, look, the human race looks very random, and they're very noisy. And we seem to live in a universe that favors life on planets like Earth. And he speculated there were planets around the other planet, around other stars, and we're finding that now. Every star apparently has planets. And then he says to Teller, he says, where the hell are they? Where are the other ETs? Because we're a very recent, we're a very young race. There should, the universe should be bursting with people like us. We should be hearing soap operas from Alpha Centauri.
Yeah, yeah.
A broadcast, radio, they should be visiting us. They aren't. It's as quiet as a cemetery out there. This made Fermi say, what is wrong with the universe? And in fact, why are we making so much noise in a very quiet place? We're attracting a lot of attention to ourselves. He was thinking outside the box. Now, an astronomer named Harrison pursued this further and said that perhaps there is a force out in the cosmos that seeks out young species like ourselves and silences them. So we have a silent universe, and it's possible that we are looking at evidence of why that is so quiet, why it's so quiet out there on Mars.
Well, let's look at planet Earth for a moment, John.
And sure.
Let's compare it to what you're talking about now.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt that when countries begin to get into the nuclear age,
yes,
that we tend to try to quiet them as a group. We try to silence them.
Right.
Very few of them get through. Those that do, we generally think we're at peace with them. But the Iranians, I'm not sure the North Koreans are going to be able to continue doing their program. So in essence, are we doing to them what they may be doing to these other planets and other civilizations?
Well, there's, you know, the idea of preventive action. And this astronomer, Edward Harrison, suggested that that's why the universe is so quiet out there. Now, that's a very grim idea.
It's horrible.
And we don't want to embrace that unless it's necessary. However, as a possibility, we must consider that we may be sitting right next door to evidence of such a process in the cosmos. And so Fermi's paradox enters this discussion. And yes, the... But right now, it's just a possibility. I'm looking forward to being with my fellow scientists who are very out-of-the-box thinkers and hearing their opinion on the data I've gathered.
Regardless of the possibilities, you are convinced that something catastrophic happened to Mars, correct?
Absolutely. It appears to have been a planet with an ocean, a stabilized greenhouse making it warm, just like Venus has a very strong greenhouse that keeps it very hot. Mars apparently had a persistent greenhouse that kept it Earth temperatures, and life thrived there. It had ozone layer apparently. It has Mars is red because its atmosphere was apparently rich in oxygen. Making a rust red. If you look at pictures of Earth from space, the deserts of Earth are red. So Earth is actually a red planet, except it's covered with oceans and clouds, and I hope it stays that way.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Mars is red because apparently it had an oxygen-rich atmosphere in the past. And if you look at the layers exposed in the Valles Marineris, which exposes the whole geologic history of Mars, apparently, thousands and thousands of layers laid down underwater, apparently, they're bright red. So Mars had, if you go to the Grand Canyon and look at the walls, they're bright red until you get down to the very bottom where the rocks turn black, and that's called the Vishnu Schist.
Absolutely.
You're right. And it is a spectacular sight. I urge everyone to do that. And you're actually looking at the geologic history of Earth in terms of its oxygen and its atmosphere. And when you get down to the bottom of the Grand Canyon, the stone laid down then was in an atmosphere that didn't have oxygen in it. It was the plant life had not yet produced enough oxygen to color the rocks red. So it's a quite fascinating study, and you can see this in the Valles Marineris. The rocks are red down to the very bottom, and that's 4 kilometers deep, whereas the Grand Canyon is only about three-quarters of a kilometer deep, depending on where you are. So this is much more geologic history being exposed on Mars. Mars apparently got oxygen very early in its history, and apparently had an evolved and expanding biosphere, just like we have on Earth. You can have what's called a Martian or a Gaia, where life gets involved in the planet's geochemistry and digs itself in. It forms an ozone layer with an oxygen atmosphere, and that protects the life and allows the life to thrive and develop and dig itself in even deeper in the planetary geochemistry. And apparently this happened on Mars, and then something came along and ended this catastrophically.
And when do you think whatever happened there, when do you think it did happen?
It looks, it's very difficult to date things on Mars, but it looks like our best guess right now is about 500 million years ago, just about the time that life, that the oxygen, there was a period on Earth called the Precambrian Explosion, where a whole new range of life forms appeared on Earth in a very rapid, very short period.
Mm-hmm.
And it's possible this may have been an invasion from Mars.
Yeah, it is.
And a shower of fragments from the catastrophe on Mars arrived on Earth, and some of the life forms from Mars clung mm-hmm. to those fragments and got going. Anyway, it's interesting that the times seem to roughly agree. Apparently, about 500 million years ago is when Mars had a calamity of some sort.
And I would prefer to believe that Mars had a some kind of natural catastrophe,
right?
As opposed to some ETs coming from another planet blowing them up.
I know Mars is next to the asteroid belt. You would expect that it would get big impacts like the one that wiped out the dinosaurs. And in fact, there is an impact about as big as Chicxulub that wiped out the dinosaurs near Cydonia. It's called the LEO Impact Basin. It's 8 kilometers deep. And apparently, it crashed into Mars. And then, apparently, after that had happened, the evidence is the nuclear events occurred. And the problem is the nuclear events all happened. They bracketed the LEO impact. So, you know, one disaster happening in the north near Cydonia, you would think, okay, that's just tough luck. Mars number came up and they didn't have a space program. Let's say there was intelligent life on Mars. They didn't have a space program to stop this asteroid like we do, and they bought it. But then why this strange pattern of nuclear radiation on the surface from two hot spots?
That's right.
It's like it's like a Sherlock Holmes story, except it's a little bit more chilling. The victim was walking under a cliff and a rock fell on him.
That's right.
But then he's got stab
piano
wounds in him.
Yeah. He's, or like this David Kelly, the doctor who many claim committed suicide in Britain during the Iraq war situation, except that he was dead by a tree and there was no blood around him. Yet he was supposed to have cut his wrists.
Oh, dear. Well, that was sloppy work by somebody.
Somebody. Go figure that.
Yeah, well. I remember a whole succession of strange suicides during the 80s by British scientists doing Star Wars research.
That's right. If you had to pick of these possible scenarios.
Yes.
In terms of what happened to Mars. I'm going to pin you down here for a moment.
Sure. That's a difficult thing, position for a scientist like me.
Where are you leaning?
Oh, I'm leaning to the fact that the nuclear events seem so unnatural and seem to have a pattern that reflects nuclear weapons rather than any natural nuclear reactor. So that is the grim direction I am leaning. And I tell you, I am not a person given to depressed or macabre thoughts. It's basically the data seems to be, that is where the trail of the data leads. It is like we found somebody at the base of a cliff whose head appears to have been bashed in by a rock, perhaps falling from the cliff naturally, mm-hmm. but then they have two stab wounds.
Yeah, same kind of thing. Is
so
it conceivable?
Like, this person seems to have been extremely accident prone. And I think that our earthly instincts, a friend of mine he works in intelligence, and he has a joke that goes that the king sits on his throne and he says to himself, I'm paranoid, yes, but the only question is, am I paranoid enough?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you have to be, once you start dealing with the possibility of extraterrestrial intelligence, and especially if it looks like us, your mind must shift from, you must give up your naivety. You must look into scenarios that would happen on Earth and then project them out into space and see how they look. And unfortunately, that's where this seems to be headed. I was prompted by this to basically kind of, gee, if we're confronting the possibility, let's say, of evil that is just on an incomprehensible scale in the cosmos, people had nothing to do with this. No human beings were involved in this. This was entirely someone else's invention, and it made me become interested in what I call metaphysics, or what is mm-hmm. called metaphysics, you know, the study of good and evil in the cosmos itself. And I've just recently wrote a book called Cosmic Jesus, which is about the study of cosmic good. To tell you the truth, I was confronting the possibility of cosmic evil, and I'm just an Episcopalian.
And you found it, I think.
And I may have found it, yes.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it, and so I immediately turned to cosmic good. And what's interesting is studying the Bible, you find out that the word that is translated for world in most of the familiar phrases of the New Testament from the original Greek, where it was written, is, for instance, for God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son. Or when Jesus tells his disciples, go out into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature, that word that is translated as world is cosmos. It's an ancient Greek word that means exactly what it means now, the whole universe.
John, I want to talk with you more about this theory, this implosion, when we come right back. Have you watched our television program yet, Beyond Belief? You can. It is internet-based, but with all kinds of gizmos and devices out there, you can get it on your flat screen as well. It's free for 10 days. Go and watch all the various programs that are available there by going to beyondbelief.com. Simple as that. www.beyondbelief.com. Welcome back to Coast with our special guest this hour, Dr. John Brandenburg. We're taking your calls as well. John, what about the possibility that an advanced planet Earth may have launched nukes on Mars, or, you know, had craft and went there and did this? Possible?
It's a very interesting possibility. Of course, that's raised immediately by the fact that the faces we found in Galaxias Chaos and also called Utopia, and of course, the Cydonia, look like human faces. And, the first suspect would be us for doing something like this.
Yeah.
Given the rascally nature of the human race, we wouldn't put anything past our own species, and that's good. It's good that we have that honesty about ourselves. But it looks like this is so far removed in terms of the evolutionary timescales on Earth. I, as a scientist, I really think that this was quite disconnected. This is what's called the principle of mediocrity. It's the principle of SETI research, that the Earth is unremarkable. The human beings are unremarkable in the cosmos. That we are commonplace. We are, we're not exotic. And based on that, kind of humanoid face would be found elsewhere in the stars. And so it's... it's an interesting idea, and I don't blame anybody for immediately raising that possibility. You know, Atlantis or somebody did this, because there are legends on Earth in the Bhagavad Gita. You know, the employment of what sounds like nuclear weapons, Brahma Astra that was called, that created a column of fire brighter than 1,000 suns.
And they had flying machines.
And so this is consistent also with the tales of Atlantis, that there was a previous age that is lost to us where the human race enjoyed much higher technological abilities than we even do now, and weapons to go along with that, and they misused them. Georgia, it's funny. I used to think I understood a lot of human history and when I was younger.
Throw it out the window, John.
No. Just things like Easter Island, they recovered a tablet covered with writing that only appears elsewhere in the Indus Valley, where, you know, this apparently ancient nuclear war may have occurred. So somehow this tablet of writing got to Easter Island, one of the most remote places on Earth. That's just astonishing.
Listen to this possibility. Those that may have taken out the Martians also tried to take us out. Hence the reason for discussions of ancient texts about, what could be nuclear war. What if they tried to get us
right.
both?
Immediately comes to mind, and I've in fact been studying those texts recently. It's quite astonishing to me. I used to be a fundamentalist Christian. I'm still a Christian. Well, I tell one person, I said, when I was a fundamentalist, I read the Bible and I thought I understood it completely. Now I'm just an Episcopalian. And I don't claim to understand it very well at all. You know, it just... So I'm studying these other texts, and it is quite astonishing, the depiction of what sounds like a nuclear weapon going off somewhere in the Indus Valley, dropped by a flying machine, is quite startling. It even describes that the soldiers afterwards immediately jumped into rivers to wash off their armor, you know, as if to get the radioactive fallout off themselves, and that all the plant life died in the area afterwards. So this sounds very much like ancient people, or, you know, describing what they saw and trying to figure it out in terms of their own terms. It's very difficult to put a box around the technologies that used to be running around on this planet. And of course, there's also in the Bible, there's reference to the sons of God, thinking that earth women were beautiful and having children by them. And this is in the Bible. I mean, it says they had children who were great heroes, great men, about whom many legends are written. That's right there in Genesis. And it's, you know, it evokes all of these legends of the, you know, the Greek gods fathering the great heroes, Perseus and Hercules, you know, with earth women. And this happens just before the Great Flood, which is an extinction, what you would call an extinction level event. And it's recorded in by every tribe on Earth, just about. The story of the Great Flood, people building an ark or something, and getting inside it and with animals and riding out this terrible event. It's almost, to me as a scientist, it sounds like a comet or asteroid or even a nuclear weapon hit one of the polar caps or both of them and vaporized them. And that would cause a rain for 40 days and 40 nights. And then the ocean, the polar caps would reform because they're cold. And the ocean would basically absorb all of this water. And then it would end up back in the polar caps again after some period of time. And the Earth would come back to normal climate. But, of course, anyone who wasn't prepared would perish from this.
What an amazing conference you're going to have next week with all this.
Well, it's going to be, I joked, wow. It was like a bunch of a Native American medicine men getting together, as I said, to make medicine.
I love it. Let's take some calls here for you. Let's go to Max in Chicago on the wild card line. Max, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Hey, George. How are you, buddy?
Good, Maxie. Thanks.
Hey, I want to just, you know, I'm watching everything that's going on here, and I don't believe any of this. I mean, I don't believe we've been on the moon. I don't believe we've got a rover on Mars.
You don't think so?
I mean, I know that sounds pessimistic, but
no.
It looks like the more we find out about our government, the more they lie about almost every single thing to keep us under suppression and keep us under fear, and we can't even find an airplane the size of a football field on our own planet.
I know.
Everything you've said, Max, makes sense. It does. I mean, I believe we went to the moon, and I believe we've got the rovers up there on Mars right now. But
well, they're seeing lights, and they can't explain those.
Right. However,
you know, it looks like a bunch of aliens are camped out having a campfire in the distance.
However, if government was going to mislead us, they would, believe me.
Oh, sure. I mean,
and he's right about that.
And all governments kind of parcel out information to the public. Even, you know, look at Moses crossing the Sinai with the tribes of Israel. You think he told them that they're going to have to cross the Jordan and fight a war? No.
Or they're going to be wandering, or they're going to wander for 40 years?
Yeah, he didn't tell them any of that stuff. He barely even told them where their next meal was coming from.
My gosh.
When I worked in Washington, D.C. for 15 years, and I worked closely with, I worked on this SDI, the Star Wars Defense thing, and I was part of the Clementine mission to the moon, and you know, we're going to the moon on this Defense Department mission,
mm-hmm.
And I've seen the shuttle tapes, you know, of all the stuff darting around out in space, and I've listened to Ronald Reagan on several occasions talk about, wouldn't it be interesting if we were confronted with alien invasion?
Yep.
So I know all of this, but then we're going to the moon on what appears to be a recon mission.
Somebody picked up your other phone, by the way. Did you hear that?
They did?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, boy. I did this all for patriotic reasons, George.
Yes, you did. All right, let's go now to Lather in Santa Cruz, California. Go ahead there, Lather.
Hi. I got a question for you. You know, it's a good theological question. What if the sun is actually Adam, the moon is Eve, the super planet was Abel, Mars is where Noah's flood came from as an ark spaceship, and the 40 days and 40 nights was raining from the Mars flood to Earth of water evaporating, like he said.
That's an interesting theory.
And Earth is actually Seth, Eve's second son, that had for us to come to.
Well, that's an interesting allegory. You know, the ancient times, they believed all the planets were somehow gods at the same time.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Mars and Venus. And Mars and Venus had an affair that got Vulcan and her husband upset.
You guys know what fracking is, right?
Allegory.
I'm doing a whole show on fracking next week, as a matter of fact.
I was just going to say, I got this one comment. It's great. Okay. I'm using the word fracking, but if you get a picture of Mother Earth, I've already got shirts being made. It says, quit fracking my mother.
Well,
I meant stop, but it's just I had to say.
All right.
Whoops.
They got to him, too.
They got to him, too. Well, now that the Russians have shown that even though they're not communists anymore, they're still Russians. Fracking is now being invoked as part of our national defense because
I'm doing a full show on that next week, John. As a matter of fact,
it's such
a big issue.
I'm worried, of course, about breaking up the whole water table under the United States in order to get some natural gas. But the natural gas is sure handy, I'll tell you. I'm a proponent of fusion energy. And nuclear power, safe nuclear power. So I would just assume we had a crash program to harness nuclear power in a much safer, cleaner way. So that's my answer. But
how advanced do you think Mars once was?
Looking at the pictures, it's difficult to see this as anything more than a Bronze Age kind of civilization. But, of course, we don't know. The only way you can really know is, and you can't even put a rover down in Cydonia Mensa. And, of course, who would run the rover? JPL? I don't believe anything they say on this subject anymore. So you'd have to, you're going to have to put astronauts down with shovels. And they're going to have to dig down through the debris layers there to find out what the civilization there was like. And I'm convinced that I have concluded this is...
You're right.
We have signs of a dead civilization there. I'm just convinced of it now after seeing all the pictures. What we're seeing is eroded archaeology that is very ancient. It's pretty beat up. And if you look at archaeology, like look at pictures of the Sphinx taken in the 20s, it was really beat up. They've patched it up a lot because of the tourists, you know. Tourism is a big thing in Egypt. But all earthly archaeology is pretty eroded. And the most interesting match between the Cydonia face and also the faces at Galaxis Chaos are the Olmec heads. And what's interesting is the Olmec heads down in Old Mexico are themselves mysterious. They seem to depict people who are... not Native American, they look like they're African. And so even the Olmec heads are mysterious. They have heads in helmets with helmet ornaments on them. And the frame of the helmet around the face is very similar to what's found in Cydonia. And it's remarkably similar, in fact. And yet the Olmec heads, we should know all about the Olmecs because they're apparently the founding civilization in Old Mexico, and yet we know almost nothing about them. So we're confronted with mysteries on every hand. There's evidence that there was a worldwide trade grid stretching all the way from Africa to the Americas, from Asia, and yet we don't understand how that could have occurred, but apparently the Olmecs look as though they were communicating or, in fact, colonists from either Asia or Africa. And then, of course, they're the match to the face in Cydonia. It's very peculiar. It's very puzzling, George.
Why do you think we've lost knowledge on this planet?
You'd be amazed how quickly knowledge disappears if you have a big enough disruption. When the Roman Empire fell, the Germanic tribes overran Europe. And imagine a giant motorcycle gang riding through town, destroying everything, burning the libraries, shutting off the internet. Only instead of riding motorcycles, they're all riding horses. And they basically set up a new sort of anarchic government. You know, there's no government officials. Nobody's repairing the roads anymore, the libraries, all the public buildings. Everybody just goes back to subsistence farming. And you lose an enormous amount of knowledge that way. The apparently the Catholic monasteries in Ireland preserved a great deal of ancient learning. And of course, the Eastern Roman Empire preserved a lot of knowledge that then was transmitted to the Arabs when they conquered the place, and then from the Arabs back to Europe. So if you have enough disruption, I lived in Florida, and I went through two hurricanes in the Cape Canaveral area. I was living in Cocoa Beach in Cape Canaveral. And you realized, boy, if we have another year of hurricanes, we had two bad hurricanes, and you realize, gee, if this happens again next year, people are just going to start abandoning this place because people couldn't repair anything. The businesses relied on tourism, and they couldn't get enough people coming to visit to, you know, repair their signs and things like this. You must understand that human society and all of its knowledge and everything like this, very fragile. All it takes is a big series of calamities, and unfortunately, we're back in the dark ages again.
Yeah, I think so, too. Let's grab one quick call. Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut. Go ahead, Bill.
Doctor, I'll talk real quick. I have two quick questions for you. I am an amateur astronomer, and I am an atheist. I'm saying both because of my two quick questions. Question number one, how could you know that the radiation with nuclear war on Mars 500 years ago, when 30 years ago in 1984, when the first lander rover, Curiosity, that's on Mars now, is the first instrument that has a RAD, radiation detector, and that didn't land until 2012. Question number two, if I could say quickly,
we won't get that in, Bill. We won't get in number two. Go for number one there, John.
Number one, we orbited Mars with radiation, gamma ray spectrometer, I believe is on their Mars Surveyor, and that looked at all the gamma rays, and the Russians actually did the same thing, and they found levels of radiation from thorium and uranium. That are part of what I'm basing this on. Also, when they sampled the atmosphere, they found a pattern of stable isotopes of xenon that match those from nuclear weapons.
John, thanks for being on the program. It's fascinating. Good luck at your conference. More to come in just a moment.